On today's episode of The Good Word with Goodwill, we talk about last night's NBA action, MVP versus MVP. We talk the different ways to rebuild your roster. We're looking at you, Detroit Pistons. And we tell you which games to watch this week. All that and producer John on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports, the host of this podcast. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie Network. Get us wherever you get your podcast. It is Wednesday, which means it is a solo show, me and producer John this morning. John, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Vinny. Last day before I turn 39. How's it feel on the other side of the wall?
I don't know, because I don't feel 39 right now, at least because it's in the middle of January and I'm doing this little new thing and all this other stuff. So I'm feeling a little lighter on my feet. You know what
nice.
I mean?
Feeling fresh.
Yeah. Not quite fresh. Still tired.
Fresher.
Still tired as hell. Still not getting sleep. But, you know, we working here. And I'll tell you something else, John. I think, and people who know me will know that I have been off of the Detroit Lions narcotic for a very long time. I think the Lions win this weekend, believe it or not.
As a fan of the Dallas Cowboys, which I have admitted on this podcast before, I will tell you the way that that game where the referees basically stole it from the Lions at the end of the game, like week 16, week 17, whatever that was, I remember walking away from that game going, we just pissed off the Lions. And that might be real bad news for the rest of the league, because that's a talented team that when you piss them off, it could be problems. And I think they're mad at what happened with the Cowboys. They think everyone's against them and they're really coming together and they're playing real hard.
Yeah. And the other part is, I don't know how good Tampa Bay is.
Also true.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just what it comes down to. I'm not sure if Tampa Bay is any good.
I don't think any quarterback has ever looked less like a quarterback than Baker Mayfield looks as a quarterback. Like, that's just like an aesthetic thing. Like, he just doesn't look like a guy. I think it's like he's short, but also he's got small arms and he wears big shoulder pads.
Yes, like, he does.
He looks like he's a running back or a fullback trying to play quarterback. It's really weird, but he's been playing well. But yes, Tampa, not nearly as good as Detroit. Go Lions, I guess.
Yeah, now you won't get me to say go Lions. Like, that's a little above the pale. All right, that's a little extra. I just said I believe they will win this weekend. It's not saying I'm rooting for them. I'm just saying if I were a betting man, and I'm not sure what the line is, I would say, the Lions should win this weekend. Win two playoff games in a year after not winning any in 30. Cool. Enjoy that, Detroit, right? So
I can't wait for the Bomani shout-out for you after they win again this weekend.
Yeah, Bo is a man who has gotten off of the Atlanta Falcons narcotic and wants me to get back on the Detroit Lions drug. I have zero clue how any of that actually works in the Bomani multiverse, but somehow it works for him and he thinks it's going to work for me. Not at all. So, John, last night, it was possible that we were going to see two blowouts just because we've seen a bunch of blowouts on national TV the last couple of weeks. But last night was the showdown of two MVPs, of the last two MVPs, Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid. And John, I said this on Twitter, and I mean this with my whole heart. If you play the same position as the other premier player, you have to guard him. I don't care about the strategy. I don't care about the coaching. You have to guard him. Part of it is the theater, right? Part of it is not necessarily trash talk, because Jokic doesn't really talk trash to Embiid. Embiid just would go off and whine about how nobody likes him and we didn't want to give him the MVP, and then he won the MVP and still didn't make the damn conference finals, okay? Right? And all Jokic did was get out of the conference finals, win the MVP of the NBA Finals, and dispatched the Miami Heat in five games on, and by the way, swept the Lakers in the conference finals. He handled his business. But in these matchups, in these one-to-one matchups, it clearly means more to Joel Embiid than it does to Nikola Jokic. I think that's what you saw last night. You saw Nikola Jokic treat this like it was not quite in another game, but he played it like he would play another game. Like, he didn't have an extra level of intensity for this one. Joel Embiid, this was his Super Bowl. This was an important game for him. 41, 10 assists, 7 boards, a block shot. Like, if we think about it, and perhaps this is an indictment on the Philadelphia 76ers and Joel Embiid, these games mean a lot because the playoff games have not bared any good fruit. Right? Going to the second round and somehow, shall we say, shitting the bed every single time for the past few years. It's kind of what the Philadelphia 76ers have done. And because Joel Embiid wants his MVP so bad, he's going to play his best against a guy like Jokic.
I'm gonna take you outside of this conversation just for a second to explain my point, because I actually have a counterpoint to your point. A month and a half ago, back before the Grizzlies got Ja Morant back, I think, the Mavericks were playing the Memphis Grizzlies, and Luka Doncic was having a good game in the first half. And in the second half, a man named Vince Williams Jr., who I had never heard of before this game, starts playing Luka full court on defense while talking mad trash while the Grizzlies are down like 20. And the funny thing is, he was getting the best of the matchup. Almost every time down the court, he was bothering Luka. He was getting steals. He was getting blocks. And every time he would win this one-on-one matchup, he would talk trash, and Luka would look up, point at the scoreboard, and be like, we're up 20. And then it was, we're up 15. And then it was, we're up 10. And they eventually, they won the game, but it got closer than it needed to be. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the Joel Jokic thing is kind of the same. Remember last year, it was at the end of the year, it was who's going to make the run for MVP at the end of the year?
Mm-hmm.
Joel went, I'm going to score 50 points a game. This MVP is mine. I'm the real king in here. And Jokic was like, we're going to cruise for the last month and a half of the season. We're not going to play too hard. We got a big lead in the West. And I think his philosophy was scoreboard. We're going to get the ring at the end. We're going to go further in the playoffs. And that is what people are going to remember. I already got two MVPs. What people are going to remember is whether or not I have a ring. What people are going to remember from Joel is not that he won the MVP last year or that he beat Jokic last night by playing harder than him. It's going to be which one of these guys has more rings when you're comparing them. And so I think this game is vitally important for Joel because he's got to show, like, I can play as well as Jokic. And I think Jokic is like, why am I going to play hard? It's January. I'm going to save my body. And at the end of the season, we're going to see if I have two rings that I can lord over you.
And I have zero reason to believe that that won't be the case at the end of the season. And Oklahoma City's really good. Minnesota's really good. I'm going to see Minnesota tonight in Detroit. I'm going to see them live for the first time. So I'm going to be very curious how all that works out. And seeing the Towns, Rudy Gobert setup. But of course, you know, I'm here really to see the Ant-Man. I'm just, those dudes are just there. You know what I mean? But I will say, Nick Nurse, for all of his Mad Hatter tendencies, right? He's the guy that threw the box and won at Stephen Curry in the 2019 NBA Finals. And he was, shall we say, he was not covering himself in Phil Jackson glory two rounds before when he and Brett Brown were going, you know, terrible adjustment for terrible adjustment in that Raptors 76ers semifinal. But because he's willing to throw anything against the wall, he not want to say threw a junk defense against Jokic, but he put Tobias Harris on him, which is why I said, Joel Embiid, you got to take that matchup. Same thing for Nikola Jokic. If somebody has to wear that 40, it's going to have to be you. If you're Nikola Jokic, I don't care what's going on. If your counterpart is dropping 40, somebody else can't be wearing that matchup. You can't put Aaron Gordon on him and say, Aaron, AG, I know you're the better defender. I need you to take him. No, guard your man. And there's something very old school about that, about guarding your man, even if even if that man has sent a limo for you to make sure that you get your ass to the game on time, because he going to wear you out. If that's the case, he going to wear you out, and you're going to have to get him back on the other end, right? But Nick Nurse, the one thing that always jumps out whenever the Nuggets lose a game is like, okay, Jokic is always going to be uber efficient. So what happens? Is it the defense that failed him, or is it the shooting that failed him? And last night it was the fourth quarter shooting, 17 points, 2 of 8 from 3. And Jokic only had 2 field goals. I think he was 2 of 4. Usually you want him to have more shots up in that instance. Tobias Harris, in the start of that fourth quarter, wore the Denver Nuggets out. And if you're talking about a player like, whether it's he or Tyrese Maxey, if Embiid can't keep up this 34, 35 point pace, my fear for Embiid, John, is this. The regular season is not meaningless the way that some people frame it to be. The regular season is it creates habits, in my opinion. It creates habits for what the expectation for performance is going to be during the playoffs. And if Joel Embiid is going to be the guy that averages 35 points a night in the regular season, then you're going to pencil him in for 35 points a night in the playoffs, when you have to play every other day, when the travel is there, and you can't sit out games with a sore knee. You're going to have to play through that stuff. I'm not saying his sore knee isn't something you shouldn't play through, but I'm simply saying that either you raise your game or you play to the level of the regular season. You cannot do what he's done the past couple of years, which is drop down almost 10 points a game. Your field goal percentage goes down. Your three-point percentage goes down. So you can beat up on all the tomato cans. You can beat up on Nikola Jokic on a given night. But when it counts in the playoffs, because you don't have another high-level, super high-level player, you're creating habits that you may not be able to sustain. And then you're going to be asking the Tobias Harrises of the world and the Tyrese Maxeys of the world to play above their heads when the standard has not been that. So I feel like for the 76ers, if they want to get up to the Boston Celtics level, up to the Milwaukee Bucks level, because I feel like they're a tier below. And I still think the Miami Heat would have their number in the playoff series, just because I give the coaching advantage and I give the Heat a culture advantage in knowing who they are. I don't know if scoring 40 points a night is what's best for the Philadelphia 76ers in the long run.
Maybe this is how we transition to the other game that happened last night. We don't need to get into the whole load management conversation we were having before we started recording, but in previous recent seasons, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, not only were not playing every game, but if you watch them, Kawhi was not defending the best player on the other team until the fourth quarter, if at all, in the regular season. And they would always say, oh, he's got that in the playoffs. He'll get that in the playoffs. You need him for 40 minutes on Giannis, you're going to get it in the playoffs. What I'm seeing from the Clippers this year is what you just talked about. The like, okay, no, let's not treat the regular season like it's meaningless. Let's treat it like it's muscle memory. Let's play these games, not quite with a playoff intensity, but a playoff-like plan. And as a result, you're seeing the Clippers play at a higher level than pretty much everybody else on any given night. And I think the only question or concern surrounding the Clippers is the one that's always there, which is, are they going to be able to sustain? Are they going to be able to stay healthy? But I don't think we have to worry about the Clippers anymore building bad habits through not taking the regular season seriously.
Dude, I'm going to tell you this. We have all had like toxic relationships in our lives, things that we cannot quit for whatever reason, right? That's why some people have dry Januaries. That's why some people quit their resident football teams, because it is the toxic relationship that they can get rid of. I don't have a toxic relationship with the LA Clippers, but I can imagine some people who do. Some people who will perpetually look at the Clippers and say, look at the wings. Look at Ty Lue on the sidelines. There's no reason why they should not be a viable contender. There's no reason why they shouldn't consistently be in a super strong Western Conference, in the Western Conference Finals every year. And every year, well, not quite every year, but in most years, they have disappointed. And I know there were some people, there were some jokes made last week about Kawhi Leonard signing an extension with the Clippers, in which he saved them a few dollars. And they were like, oh, now that Kawhi signed his extension, watch him go ahead and miss a few more games now because his contract is now in ink and it's signed. But I think conversely, there is now a synergy there. There's now trust. There's now equity in the entire process, right? To where there's comfort. And everybody knows that not just for Kawhi Leonard, but for James Harden and Paul George, those two, you can't sign James Harden to any type of deal now, any type of extension now due to CBA rules and the trade and everything else. He would have to sign in the offseason. Paul George, they're still talking with him now. It looks like he's going to resign. Looks like. But everybody knows this whole thing is kind of on the line this season. I don't think they have to get to the finals. I think if you get to the Western Conference Finals and you lose to the Denver Nuggets, a team that looks like they're your kryptonite, and we just talked about that fat man a couple minutes ago, yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. Like, I don't think anybody would look at that as a failure. But when you consider, and last night they beat the Oklahoma City Thunder, and to John's point, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander might be the toughest cover in the league. From the standpoint of, you never know where he's going. You never know how fast he's going. You never know how slow he's going. He creates his own rhythm. I think Jamal Crawford on TNT said that last night at halftime, that he's hard to peg. And because you can't put your hand on anybody on the perimeter, you can't guide him. You can't steer him. You can't force him. And Kawhi Leonard, if he played in the 90s during the Derek Harper, I'm going to steer you where I want you to go era, he would be illegal defense, literally, because those hands are so big and so strong, he could literally just push you where he wants to go. But now he's just relying on making sure that his body is square with you and getting up when you get up. And he caught Shai Gilgeous-Alexander during a critical stretch in the fourth quarter last night. And it didn't look like a great game for SGA. And if you're going to give him something, if they're going to say that something could possibly give him trouble, it'd be multiple wing defenders. It'd be the length. The same length that he would use over you would be the length that you kind of use to get in his airspace. That it may be not necessarily from a primary defender, but from the help defender in the ways of deflections, in the way of closing down those passing lanes. And you try to make the other guys beat you. Not necessarily Jalen Williams, because I think Jalen Williams is real. And of course, Chet Holmgren is all-time real. Like you guys have known, if you guys have listened to me on this podcast, I am a huge, huge fan of Chet Holmgren. I think Oklahoma City is built for the present and the future. And it really depends on whether they want to make a move right now to elevate themselves and put themselves in a different position or to solidify themselves, or if they want to wait. But for the Clippers, Paul George, from December 31st, basically, he shooting like 46% from three, averaging over 25 a game. The Clippers have won 9 of 11. They lost to Minnesota the other night in Minnesota, where there was the Russell Westbrook trolling Rudy Gobert thing, as if Russell Westbrook likes being trolled by fans or opposing teams. He does not like that at all. So I'm very surprised that he would go back to that well, knowing that, you know, don't climb up that tree. That tree will fall on you. But for purposes of this conversation, Paul George, 38, 7 boards, 5 assists, 3 steals. Like, Harden got stripped at the top of the key, which you rarely see, and then came back down and hit 2 threes in a row. Like, they have a number of answers for whatever questions that you may have. And to our other conversation, to the point that John made and to the point that we were making earlier as far as the Nuggets and 76ers, they're building real life continuity here. They're building real habits here. We'll say championship habits. Still early, it's January. But they're building real habits. They're not quite top 10 offense, top 10 defense. Those things you need, in my opinion, to be a viable championship contender. And because they started off the year so poorly, they're going to have to scratch and claw to get there. But when you have the Lakers that are struggling, you have the Phoenix Suns who are trying to climb themselves up out of it. The Golden State Warriors are champions, but man, they going through it. The run is done. Just what it looks like. It looks over, right? It looks over. If you're the Clippers and you see Minnesota at the top, you see Oklahoma City at the top, you're not thinking these are teams we have to fear. And Ivica Zubac is out for, I think, 4 weeks with a calf injury. And I think that is something to watch, but they do have Mason Plumlee back there. They do have Daniel Tice. I mean, not to be funny about this, John, they got the market cornered on 7 foot white dudes. Athletic 7 foot white dudes, mind you.
Just wait until they trade for Kelly Olynyk. You know it's coming.
Are they trading PJ Tucker for Kelly Olynyk? Is that the deal that we're saying is going to happen?
I'm sure they would like to have Kelly Olynyk. There's actually a handful of teams that I've heard are interested in Kelly Olynyk. Man, that run in the FIBA World Cup really boosted the stock of Kelly Olynyk. Everyone wants him on their bench now.
Hey, look, I've seen Kelly. We've seen his movies before. You know, like there's nothing wrong with an athletic and rangy big dude, right? And I was just joking about the white stuff, people. I was just playing. Like, don't send us letters or anything like that. It was just a joke. Like John, we are coming off the MLK conversation, you know, that we had with David Dennis Jr. So some people might be a little sensitive to the jokes, right? Right? And then we go to James Dolan, a rich white man who just decides to get himself sued. Right, John? He got himself sued along with the name Harvey Weinstein. You remember, you know the name Harvey Weinstein? I never knew there was going to be some level of NBA bent to it. But if I had to bet there was going to be some NBA name tied to it, I would have bet it's James Dolan, the owner of the New York Knicks. And apparently there was a masseuse who was traveling around with James Dolan's traveling band. In case you guys didn't know, JD and the Straight Shot, or they opened for the Eagles. And James Dolan is a big time musician. And the details are really heinous, if you can imagine. She's suing him in civil court. She wants a public, of course, acknowledgement and all of those things. And because, of course, it's Harvey Weinstein, it's an automatic, shall we say, assumption of guilt. And because there's an automatic assumption of guilt, everybody naturally goes to the Robert Sarvers and the Donald Sterlings and get this guy up out of here. Not sure if that's going to happen, right? I'm sure there would be some people around the league and other teams who would say, hey, if this is the smoking gun, let's get this dude out of here. But, you know, for yourself, go read the details. The details are really heinous. I don't know what to make of it just because it's in a civil suit. Adam Silver said that this is the first that he'd heard of it since it was in a story. I'm not sure I quite believe that, but that is the thing that you are supposed to say when the relationship is that your boss, which is James Dolan, got in something and you're supposed to be the guy to spearhead maybe in an investigation against your boss, not the other way around, right? So that's just that. Now, back to more basketball, John, because last night there was a report that came down from The Athletic about a possible trade between the Toronto Raptors and Indiana Pacers. Of course, Pascal Siakam is one of those names who've been on the board for a long time because he's a pending free agent. He's, of course, going to be up for a huge contract this offseason. So any team that trades for him, you don't necessarily have the assurances, but you want to be able to have a good chance to re-sign him this summer. And if you're a team like the Indiana Pacers, you're not going to get a guy like that in free agency. You have to be able to bring him in-house and sell him on Tyrese Halliburton and basketball mad Indianapolis. And hey, we have a chance to make real noise in this Eastern Conference and to be able to compete with the Bostons and the Milwaukees and Phillies and Miamis. An Eastern Conference that's quietly getting a little on the top heavy side, which I think is a really good thing.
You left out one thing, which is trading for him would give the Pacers his bird rights, which means while the Celtics and the Knicks and the Lakers and all these other teams are trying to sign Siakam in free agency, the Pacers can at least say, we can offer you more money. That's really what this is. Like, they sure, they want him for this year, but now they can offer him more money than anybody else come this offseason.
Yes, and he wants all his money. I ain't even mad at it. That man wants all of his money. And so the Pacers reportedly are offering 3 first-round draft picks, Buddy Hield, whose name is always in these trade discussions, and probably Bruce Brown. And I know there was at least a thought that the Pacers were trying to find a third team to unload Bruce Brown. I don't believe that to be true. Now, I'm sure, I mean, could there be different machinations of this trade if it were to happen that could involve Bruce Brown going to a third team? Sure. But I think it's just to make the money match. And I think it would involve Bruce Brown heavily, at least to this point, going to the Toronto Raptors. Tyrese Haliburton is out with that hamstring injury, which, you know, he did the splits on the floor. And the Pacers are trying to not only keep pace and keep momentum with everything that they've been doing with the style of play that is reminiscent of the 7 seconds or less Phoenix Suns. They want to capitalize on the momentum. They want to make sure they stay at the top of everybody's tongue in the Eastern Conference. And Pascal Siakam, that's a huge upgrade on the wings. That is a guy that can not only play off of Tyrese Haliburton, but that's a guy that can go out and get his own. And once again, if you're the Pacers, if you're some of these smaller market teams, that's why a team like the Cleveland Cavaliers went and got Donovan Mitchell a couple years ago. And we don't know if they are going to be able to actually re-sign Donovan Mitchell. But if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers or the Pacers or the Detroit Pistons, this is the route that you have to go. Free agency is not going to be it for you. You have to be able to use your cap space and make transaction trades in the season or draft night trades, which could be the case for the Pistons if they don't do anything before the February 8th deadline. So I'm very intrigued to see if this is going to actually happen. Usually, if a trade isn't consummated really early, sometimes it fizzles. Once it gets out there a little bit, other teams start calling and you start wondering about the price. 3 first round picks is a steep, steep price in a luxury tax world, in a Midwestern town, in a, shall you say, a low revenue team. This is not the Lakers, who have their own TV, individual TV deals, their own revenue streams and everything else. This is the Pacers. You got to be able to think about things a little different. And having multiple first round picks go out the door, cost controlled first round picks, mind you, as the salaries keep escalating across the board for the max deals, for the mid-level deals, even going to get a guy like Bruce Brown is expensive for you. You have to be able to keep some draft capital, but the reason that you keep your draft capital is to go and get a player like Pascal Siakam. So I totally understand.
I'm interested in your perspective on the other side of this deal. Let's imagine for a second that the deal is Buddy Hield, Bruce Brown, and 3 first round picks for Pascal Siakam. Like you said, steep price, maybe it doesn't happen. There was rumors that the Raptors and Kings got this far, and then the Kings kind of backed away at the steep asking price for Siakam. That's fine. Maybe it doesn't happen, but if we imagine that happens, Masai Ujiri has turned OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam into Buddy Hield, Bruce Brown, RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley, and a bunch of picks. And Buddy Hield comes off the books this offseason, so if you don't want him, you can go spend that money in free agency in the offseason. That's a pretty good team to build around Scottie Barnes. Like, I would wager to say the Raptors aren't really taking a step back in terms of talent, but they're clearing some cap space, which they were going to do anyway because those guys have free agency. But they still can play in free agency this offseason. Their talent level hasn't really dropped. The team arguably fits better around Scottie Barnes. And they got draft picks for the trouble. Like, if this deal actually happens, I'm going to applaud Masai and be like, that's a hell of a job.
And here's my thing. My thing generally on if you are rebuilding, which is not what the Pacers are doing, but what the Raptors are doing. There's ways to go about rebuilding, which turns us into the next topic. And Pistons fans, when they hear this, will know exactly what I'm talking about. There's ways to rebuild. in today's NBA. And John, my thinking is you can depend wholly and solely on the draft. You can hit on all your draft picks and you, boom, you get Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, Serge Ibaka, James Harden in consecutive drafts and boom, you're ready to run. That is not always likely, okay? Or you can be like Oklahoma City and sort of leverage and leverage and leverage and kick the can down the road and kick the can down the road. But you're picking up assets like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander who can play. And then you draft Chet Holmgren and then he winds up missing his rookie year because of an injury in the summer. But you give open time to players who can play in the meantime. And when Chet comes back, all of a sudden you are ready to run. Or you can, and this is the probably the least popular way to build because it wound up yielding a disaster, but I didn't think this was a bad way to build. And the Brooklyn Nets way to build, before they picked up Kevin Durant, before they picked up Kyrie Irving, think about those teams that were ravaged from not having draft picks when they traded for Kevin Garnett or old Kevin Garnett, old Paul Pierce, old Jason Terry. And they had all those picks and pick swaps. And Sean Marks had to come in there and clean up the books and also replenish the talent base. And what he did was, and I thought this was really smart on his part, he traded for players on bad contracts who could still play, but the contracts were greater than what they were bringing on the floor. You trade for bad contracts, but give me a pick for my troubles. Give me a first round pick so I can get some of my picks back. I'm taking your player in this bad deal, so I'm filling up my cap space, but he can still reasonably play. But give me a draft pick. And that's how you wind up replenishing your own cupboard. And hopefully you can build a culture in the meantime. The way that the Pistons did it was with Troy Weaver, who had an excellent pedigree in scouting, was I'm going to take chances on all of these former high-level picks, James Wiseman, Marvin Bagley, you know, Alec Burks, who's more on the veteran side than the young side, and hopefully one of these lottery tickets will work out. And it hadn't worked out, right? Now, Bagley and Isaiah Livers and two future second-round picks were traded to the Washington Wizards for Danilo Gallinari and Mike Muscala. And now the Pistons are in a position where they have, if my numbers are right, somewhere around $65 million in future cap space this summer. And remember what I just told you guys about teams like Detroit, Minnesota, Indiana. You're not going to be able to actually go into the market and sign a max player. And $65 million sounds like a lot of money, and it is. But think about what max salaries are in today's game. Think about the salary cap jumping up and up and up. If you had $60 million before, man, you could do some real shopping in free agency. Now you got $60 million in cap space. You want to go find guys on existing contracts. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to ask John this question because I'm so well-versed in Pistons history because clearly, you know, Detroiter, I've covered the team for a number of years. I've seen the bad. Seen a lot, not 28 straight losses bad as a beat writer, but pretty damn bad. So, John, if you had to, off the top of your head, guess, who would be the biggest free agent the Detroit Pistons would have signed?
Like free agent coming from another team and joining the Pistons?
Yep.
Wow. Let's see. They traded for Blake Griffin. God, it can't be as old as like Chauncey Billups, can it?
He would be the best free agent that they've signed.
Okay.
So yeah, Chauncey Billups, I believe, signed like a 4-24 deal in the summer of 2002. Of course, lower salary cap world and everything else. But they signed in the summer of 2009, Ben Gordon and Charlie Villanueva to I think Gordon got $55 million. Charlie Villanueva got $35 million. Remember, lower salary cap world, and that did not work out. And then in the summer of 2013, they went and signed Josh Smith, which was an utter disaster. And you don't want to have to go and make those type of, I won't say panic signings, but those type of signings in free agency, you know, just to fill up your cap space. And remember now, guys, this is also a world where 90% of your cap has to be reached by September 15th before the season begins. So this is not something where they can just hoard cap space, kick it down the road, kick it down the road, kick it down the road. And Gallinari, Muscala are contracts that come off the books. Joe Harris, a contract that they took in over the summer because they didn't see the free agent class bearing a lot of fruit, coming off the books as well. They're in discussions. They are in internal discussions, you could say, about DeJounte Murray, right? The question is, will DeJounte Murray cost you Jaden Ivey? Are you ready to move on from Jaden Ivey? I don't believe that they would necessarily have to trade Jaden Ivey to get DeJounte Murray, but the bad part is they have 5 second-round picks in the next 7 years, and Atlanta, who is clearly underwhelming, will probably want first-round picks for DeJounte Murray. You see what I'm saying? There's no way to be perfect when you're rebuilding, but when you make a mistake and you have to cover up a mistake with second-round draft picks or a future first to get a team to take your guy off of your hands when it probably cost you a draft pick to take on the guy, then you find yourself in a position where you are repeatedly chasing yourself. You're chasing old mistakes. You're throwing money after money, or you're throwing asset after a mistake. And the one thing the Pistons or any other team, and Jake Fisher, I believe, said this on No Cap Room last week, and I think he's written it before, that there's a lot of teams in on DeJounte Murray. What you don't want to do for a player like DeJounte Murray is bid against yourself, is throw extra draft picks out there because you're bidding against four other teams. And that's what the Atlanta Hawks want you to do, because they're trying to rebuild, and they're trying to rebuild on the fly. They're not trying to strip it all the way down. They got Trae Young there. They're trying to rebuild on the fly, and for them, hopefully, be able to turn your first-round draft picks into better-fitting players. So it's just it's an interesting thing for a team like Detroit before the trade deadline comes up, February the 8th. I don't believe that they should be sitting and waiting for free agency. That's never a good proposition for them. But if you want to have cash on hand, shall we speak? You know, shall we say? Cash on hand? All right, cool. We got cash on hand. So, John, we were supposed to hit a few other things, but I feel like we don't have the time to hit the few other things. So let's get to the games of the week, the remaining games of the week that intrigues us between now and Sunday. John, what's the first one you got?
First one I got is tonight's game. You know, I'm a Dallas Mavericks fan. Mavericks play the Lakers tonight. And for me, these are two teams that, like, they always kind of bring out the best in each other. They play on Christmas Day a lot of the times. And I don't know what to make of either one of these teams right now. Like, the Lakers looked great against the Thunder. They almost looked like in-season tournament Lakers, where, like, LeBron was having a great game, AD was having a great game. They were dragging the rest of the team to a victory over a good team. Is that the Lakers we're going to see, or is it going to be the same one we've seen since the in-season tournament, where it's like LeBron and AD are not enough? And then the Mavericks, I don't know yet if Luka is playing tonight. Luka hasn't played in, I don't know, 3 or 4 games. Mm-hmm, and the Mavericks have really had to rely on Kyrie, who's playing out of his mind.
Yes,
and then
every
game, there's like one other guy who has to have a big game. Last time it was Tim Hardaway Jr. He had 41 points. So I don't know if we're getting the Luka Mavericks, which is always interesting because the Mavericks play different without Luka than with Luka, because two different point guards, Kyrie running the show versus Luka running the show. It's a very different offense. It's faster paced and all that. So I'm interested to see which Mavericks team shows up. I'm interested to see which Lakers team shows up. And I think either way, it's going to be a pretty good game.
I'm with you on that. That will be appointment viewing. All of these games, I think, will be appointment viewing, especially a Dallas team sans Luka, which means, like you said, a faster pace. The ball won't stick as much. Kyrie isn't a traditional point guard, but Kyrie just plays faster. He's more decisive. He makes quicker decisions. And Kyrie's entertaining as all hell. Let's be perfectly honest there. All right. He's just entertaining as hell. For me, it's an easy one. Nuggets Celtics. All right. That is an ESPN game. And that could be the NBA Finals. It could very well be the Finals. Boston looks like, you know, Boston looks like a machine. And Denver is at this point where they are at cruising altitude, as you might hear on anything other than an Alaska Airlines flight at this stage, right? Man, if you'd have got me on that plane, John, I guarantee you got me on that flight, I won't be taking no more damn flights. Everywhere would be drive and train. I'd be scared out of my mother bleeping mind, okay?
Mm-mm-mm. Is what happened to John Madden, right? John Madden, when he was like a young coach.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I think he was supposed to get on a plane and the plane crashed and he was like, that's cool. I'll just take buses everywhere. Rest of my life, buses.
The Madden Cruiser. And yep. which he and his turducken, right? Secondly, and this is a game that features the two best teams in the Western Conference. Thunder at Timberwolves, Saturday night. I'm going to see the Ant-Man tonight in Detroit. But Thunder and Timberwolves, Shea against the Ant-Man, like the future of the shooting guard position, not even the future, the present of the shooting guard position is right there in front of our faces. And unlike Jokic and Embiid, guard your man. Guard your man. I remember being on an airplane once with a former player. This was years ago, John. And he said to me, why don't these dudes guard each other anymore? He literally said that to me. He said, why don't these dudes guard each other anymore? He said, you know what? I took pride in having to take that 40. If I had to take that 40, but my teammates weren't compromised because they had to guard my man, I'm taking that 40. I'm going to try to win the game. I'm going to try to get it back. I'm going to take that 40. So if Ant-Man and Shea, I know we got Jay McDaniels over there, who's a hell of a defender for the Minnesota Timberwolves, and you don't want to get the Ant-Man in trouble, in foul trouble, but in a playoff situation, you won't be able to really hide. And for great theater and great entertainment and great competition, guard your man. That's what I want to see. Thunder, Timberwolves, Saturday night. What's the other ones you got, John?
I just want to say, as someone who, it's been probably a couple months since I played pickleball, but when you play pickleball and your team has one really good player and their team has one really good player, it's not even about guard your man. It's about, I'm going to give him, my best player is going to give their best player equal, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to give up 40, but he's going to get 40. And then he'll turn to the rest of the team, which is always me. I'm not great. I'm short. I'm old. I'm fat. But they'll turn to the rest of the team and they'll be like,
what are you, Jerry Krause now?
They're like, I just need my guys to beat his guys. I'll do my part. I'll even the table. I just need to be his guys. My last game, and I'm not going to be like super in tune to this because Tyrese Halliburton is missing, but nothing makes me happier in the NBA than a challenge trade. That's why I love this Knicks Raptors trade, where it's like each team gets equal talent and they're betting on, I can do something better with that talent than you did. And the Kings and the Pacers made that challenge trade, Halliburton, Sabonis, and it's always fun when those teams have to get back and play each other. Now, Halliburton is not going to be playing in this game, but there's always a little bit of that, like, Pacers gave up on Sabonis. They think they know how to stop him. They think they know how to keep him from being a dominant player. So it's always interesting to me to see a guy like Sabonis go back and play against the Pacers to see what they think they know about him. And, you know, if Halliburton was here, it'd be more fun to be like, oh, it's this year's Kings. You know, the crazy offense that you didn't expect in the Pacers versus last year's Kings. But it's still going to be interesting. And it's two really good coaches going at it.
Absolutely. It is two really good coaches going at it. And for a number of reasons, I'm very surprised that the Indiana Pacers actually traded Domas Sabonis. And I'm really interested in going to Indiana because do you know what's at the Indiana airport?
A basketball court. But here's the thing. I saw this. I saw the picture. I saw a basketball court in the middle of the Indiana airport. And I was like, oh, man, how much fun would it be? You got a layover. You just go shoot hoops for a while. And so I saw someone go, do they have balls? Can I bring my own ball? And someone said they actually have like plastic things in the rim. So even if you had your own ball, it's not going through the net. And I'm like, what is this? Just hang a painting of a freaking basketball court then. If you're going to give me a court, let me play.
Yeah, I mean, look, whenever you step on a floor, like, there's this urge. There's this urge just to shadow shoot. Like, that's what I'll do. Whenever I'm around, I'm going to shadow shoot. I'm going to go into the form. I'm going to go into that left-hand Nick Van Exel, Damon Stoudemire form, and I'm just going to start fake shooting, go do my in and out drip. I'm going to do all that stuff. You know, my friends who are listening, they know how I used to get down in my younger days when I, you know, when I would climb, when I would, I wasn't good. I wasn't great, John, but I was like really quick and really brave. That's what it was. I wasn't great, but I was really unselfish. I was a streaky shooter, and I was really fearless because I'm like, what point y'all gonna get hitting me coming down the lane? And they would still hit me coming down the lane, but you know, like back in the day, you had to get up. You had to, you know, once again, take your 40. Like if, like that's how we played back then, John.
All right, this is a deep cut, and I hope you get this. This is a joke okay. just for you. You're gonna be shadow shooting in the Indiana airport. I'm gonna show up, and I'm gonna be like, Shep, that's Shep.
Oh, Shep, oh, Shep. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, Shep and Nutso. Yeah, we ain't gonna be that. We ain't gonna be that, okay? One of the best basketball movies in the history, other than He Got Game, would be Above the Rim. Go watch that. Tupac, Leon, Dwayne Martin, it's a lot. Yeah, man. The late Bernie Mac, Marlon Wayans. You just took me back to my childhood. That me and my friends quote that movie all the time.
Best soundtrack ever.
It's up there. It's up there. It is really up there. My favorite Tupac song, Pain, is the closing track of Above the Rim. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is all that we have for you today on The Good Word. Thanks again to producer John and the entire team that works hard behind the scenes. Jake and Dan will be back for another episode of No Cap Room tomorrow. I will be back for another episode of The Good Word on Monday. Until then, everybody be safe.